Well, meningitis completely changed my life. When I was a young lad, all I wanted to be was a lorry driver. So as soon as I was old enough, I bought my own lorry, and we built up a good business in the road haulage industry. And we also had a truck stop. So from 1972 to 1981, 9 years, we were really doing well, and life couldn't have been any sweeter. I was just Jack the Lad, and that was it. And then one day I was over at my haulage yard, and we also had a truck stop at the time, which my wife Gloria used to run. And Gloria phoned me up to say that our little boy Spencer, he's 14 months old, he'd been out in the morning for his walk in his pushchair, and he'd sort of had his midday nap. And normally he would be jumping up and down in his cot, shaking it to pieces, get me out of here. But that day when he woke up, he was just led there with a glazed expression. So he was quite awake. Gloria called the doctor, and the doctor said, well, give him some Calpol and see how he goes. And I came home from early from my haulage yard, which was about 8 miles away. And Spencer wasn't any better, so we called the doctor again. And in those days, the GPs used to come out to the home, well, more than they do these days, but he was out within the hour. And he said, I think you ought to take him into hospital, just a precaution. And he said that we'd probably get told off in the morning. It's a false alarm, but I think you ought to take him in. So we wrapped Spencer in a blanket, and Gloria sat in the back of the car, and I drove down to Southminster Hospital down in Bristol, which is only about 20 minutes away. Spencer was still quite bright. I could tickle his face and make him smile. And we went in the waiting room, probably waited about an hour, then into a cubicle for Spencer to be examined. And as soon as they took his top off, we noticed a pinprick rash on his tummy. And straight away they said, we think he's got meningitis, bacterial meningitis, and he'd have to go into intensive care. But within 24 hours, he was completely overwhelmed by meningococcal septicemia and meningitis, and he died from the disease. In those days, there wasn't any helplines, there wasn't any charities to represent meningitis. We went back down to the hospital a few weeks later to talk to the consultant, and they said, well, we're extremely unlucky, we probably won't see another case in the hospital this year. It was November 1982. They more or less said, well, meningitis is so complicated, bacterial meningitis, you won't understand it anyway. So I took myself down to the library in Bristol, and they were right. I put all the books out, with referencing meningococcal meningitis, meningococcal septicemia. And I didn't understand it. It was very complicated. So having a truck stop, that's where we, from Monday to Friday, we would have 60 or 70 trucks on the lorry park from all over the country. And I had a licensed bar. So I decided I would raffle a bottle of whiskey every night. And I opened a bank account called the Motorways Meningitis Research Appeal. It was a bit of a mouthful, but to me, it seemed appropriate. The truck stop was called the Motorways. And we went along like that, with the odd disco and a sponsored walk for a couple of years. I was always looking through the Bristol Evening Post, through the obituary columns, to see if any other children had died. My plan was, if I could find any children, I would try and get hold of the funeral director to see if they died of meningitis and try and talk to the parents. But we never seen any. But about 3 years later, in the mid-80s, we started hearing about a number of cases in Stroud in Gloucestershire. And we were able to get in touch with some families. And we had a meeting one night. And we set up a little group called the Stroud Meningitis Support Group. So that was the end of the Motorways Meningitis Research Appeal. And I think we'd raised about £7,000 by then. And drivers used to say, well, where's the money going, Steve? And all I could say was, well, we want to fund some research, but we don't know where and it's been undertaken at the moment. So we set up this little group, the Stroud Meningitis Support Group, and the first scientist we ever came across one of the group brought in a Sunday supplement from one of the newspapers, and there was a husband and wife team in Edinburgh University, Dr. Caroline Blackwell and Professor Donald Weir, and they were researching into bacterial meningitis. It was quite basic stuff at the time. So we got in touch with them, and they came down to Stroud on the overnight sleeper train in those days and explained about what they were doing, and they asked us if we could help them. And then in Stonehouse, which is only about 2 miles from Stroud, a suburb of Stroud, if you like, the situation got worse, and two little boys, they lived on the same housing estate, and they went to the same primary school. They were in different years, and they died within a couple of days of one another from meningococcal meningitis. So there was a big public meeting a few weeks after in one of the big schools in Stonehouse. And in those days, Baroness Trumpington was the junior health minister, and Professor Donald Aitchison was the chief medical officer. And they came down to this meeting to explain that everything that could be done was being done. And we asked about research into the disease, and Baroness Trumpington said, well, if scientists come forward with their proposals, that she would look at them sympathetically. But that day, all the national newspapers were there, the national TV, radio, and that really threw meningitis in the national arena for the first time. And the very next morning, myself and Gloria went up to BBC Breakfast Television. And this is in the 1980s, so that there was no ITV. You didn't have a choice in those days. There was no ITV Breakfast Television, but just BBC Breakfast Television. The anchor man was a chap called Frank Boff, and he used to present Sports Night on a Wednesday and Grandstand on a Saturday. And Frank Boff was the main presenter of that program. But we had calls from all over the country from families that experienced meningitis. So very soon, in 1986, the Meningitis Trust was set up as the first registered national charity to represent the disease in the country. And, we put together a small team of advisors who told us at the time that we couldn't expect to see any vaccines in our lifetime. So it wasn't a case of, well, we go out and show them, but we thought if we could make a start on the research front, we could help future generations. So one of the first projects we actually funded was in Stonehouse. And because of the number of cases in Stonehouse and Stroud, there was a study that was organised by Gloucestershire Health Authority, the Department of Health. And one of our first projects, we actually put £20,000 into the project as well. And that was all the population of Stonehouse in 1985, I think, something like that, 85, 86, were asked to come down to the health centre during the course of the week to give a throat swab, a saliva sample, and a blood sample. And there was a better turnout than a general election because of the concern. So, there was later on, there was some very good data that we were able to get out of that project, that survey. We identified the 10% carriage rate, which we still basically see today with meningococcal disease. And, that paper, that study is still referenced even today when we have new proposals for research. If you look down all the references, you will come across the Stonehouse study. And I've been at many conferences when, scientists have referenced that study. So that was a study that was really worthwhile and, got the research teams interested in meningitis. So that was the start of my journey, if you like, the meningitis journey. And I started doing my marathon walks. And by the time we got to, 1998, I'd sold all my lorries, my haulage business, and we were just running the truck stop for a while, which it's all sold and gone. But it was time for me, really, in 1998 to step down. So I said I'd walk from John O'Groats to Land's End for the second time. And I was going to sort of take a back seat. But when I was walking from John O'Groats to Land's End, some very good friends of mine, Charlie and Mary Dobson and Bob Woodward, who set up a charitable trust called the Starfish Trust, were asked by the University of Bristol to if they would help set up a dedicated meningitis research unit in the School of Medical Sciences. And initially, they just wanted 150,000, just wanted 150,000 for, to start the refurbishment, if you like. And Charlie Mary Dobson, in particular, agreed to pay that money. But one of the conditions, they asked it to be called the Spencer Damon Meningitis Laboratories after Spencer. So when I got down to Land's End, it was, oh, well done, Steve. That's another walk under your belt. And you'll be pleased to know there's going to be laboratories named after Spencer. So I said, well, what's happening in Bristol? And Bob, the chief executive of the Starfish Trust, said, well, they want to see you down in Ewing Gloria down in Bristol. Charlie and Mary's going to come down. I've got to set up the meeting. And we talked to the development officer. So a few weeks later, we went down to the university and... the development director said, well, thank you very much, Mr. and Mrs. Dobson, for your 150,000, but we still need £650,000. And Charlie Mary said, well, there you are, Steve. You can, that's meat and drink to you, a capital appeal. Off you go. And I said, well, hold on a minute. Yes, well, we've already sorted that out. We'll find an appeal office for you and you'll need some staff and all that sort of thing. So that was the start of the Spencer Damon Laboratories, which became Spencer Damon Meningitis UK. So knowing friends of mine that have experienced meningitis up and down the country, I spoke to them and I agreed with the university that there was going to be probably hundreds of families that were going to help raise the 650,000 who'd experienced meningitis, and many of them were bereaved families. And in recognition of their support, we would like a wall of remembrance in the laboratories to recognize all the loved ones that have been lost to meningitis whose families had helped raise the money. So that was agreed. So we went out and raised the £650,000 in 2002. We had an official opening and lots of these families came down from all over the country. But it was decided then that as we had the infrastructure there, it was the second charity, if you like, Meningitis UK. We will continue to fundraise and support dedicated research units in the field of vaccine development throughout the UK. So that brought us up to 2013. By this time, Meningitis UK had been referring a number of families for various areas of support back to the Meningitis Trust, and we were really working closely together. So it was decided in 2013 it'd be best for the two charities to merge. So the Meningitis Trust and Meningitis UK merged, and we formed a new charity named Meningitis Now.